You ready, Steve?
Yep.
You ready? All right, let's call the Thursday, May 19th meeting of the Zone 3 Advisory Board to order. And with that, I'd like to ask Dean Benedicts for the roll call, please. And in during tonight's roll call, so this is our first televised meeting, I'd like all of the board members to introduce themselves, the city or area that they represent, as well as their names. Thank you, Dean.
Chairman Rabinault?
Bill Rabinault. I'm a city council member for the city of Pismo Beach and chairman of this organization.
Vice Chairman Gehring?
I'm Jim Gehring. I'm member at large, and I think I was selected because I just have a general knowledge of the system.
Member Angelo?
Dave Angelo, from Oceano.
Member Versaw?
Evening, I'm Larry Versaw, Mayor Pro Tem with Grover Beach.
Member Costello?
Good evening, I'm Joe Costello, Mayor Pro Tem from the City of Arroyo Grande.
Member Wallace?
Good evening, I'm John Wallace, the District Engineer for the Avila Beach Community Services District and representing CSA 12, which is the Avila Valley and the Port St. Louis for the commission here.
And Member Reynolds?
I'm Tom Reynolds. I'm a reappointed delegate from the agriculture community.
All right, then, we have a quorum.
Yes, we do.
Thank you. I'd also now at this time like to welcome AGP Video. This will be the first airing of the Zone 3 Advisory Board meetings. As many of you know, water is a very, very important issue within our county. And as far as I'm concerned, and I've been talking about this for years, is that if you don't have water, you don't have anything. You can talk about our jurisdiction on this board, however, strictly deals with Lake Lopez. It deals with the treatment plant, and it deals with distribution. For those of you that live in this area, you are all drinking state water. I think that's probably one of the most common questions that I get. Because even though Arroyo Grande and Grover do not have state water, or Avila for that matter, what happens is that it is mixed at the water treatment plant. So the water that comes to your faucet, to your bathroom, to your kitchen, is a mix of state water, Lopez water, and that's how it's distributed. So I kind of wanted to give an overview to everyone about what this board does and how important this board and their decisions really are. At this time, what I'd like to do is open it up to the public for any comments on issues or concerns or anything else that is not on the agenda. I'll open it to the public. Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Pardon me? Oh.
I think I'd be public tonight. Okay. My name is Steve Matthew, AGP Video. First of all, I'd like to thank this board for having the foresight and advanced thinking to televise this, because I also think that it's important to the entire valley, the whole watershed. I'm going to do everything in my power to get it broadcast as broadly to the watershed as possible. Tonight it's going out live on Channel 20 in Grover Beach. It will be replayed on Channels 20 in each of the individual cities and 21 countywide. I'm also going to compress it and put it on our website, slow-span.org, so it's available 24/7 to anybody, and maybe the staff could help advertise and get out that, you know, this will be available and on record forever.
Yeah.
So thank you again for the chance to work with you and reach the public.
Good. Thanks, Steve, very
Mr.
much.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question to Steve?
Yes.
Steve, what was the website, and is that streaming video all the time?
Yes, it is. We're not streaming live tonight. I wasn't set up to do it, but at some point in the future, I will do it live. It will be compressed and on within the next 2 days. And the website, again, is www.slo-span.org. or any variation thereof.
Good, thank you.
I got everything that's even remotely like it. So you can misspell it and still get there.
All right, thanks again.
Yes.
One thing I'd like to mention is that AGP video brings some benefits to the committee. For instance, the overhead projector that you see projecting the agenda up on the wall is a digital projector, and it will project color, plain paper copies up onto the wall. It's a capability we've never had before. And in addition, with their laptop, you can run PowerPoint programs on the PowerPoint mode in the laptop for the committee, something we didn't have before.
Sure, tremendous asset, tremendous asset. Okay, let's move along to the meeting minutes of March 17th, 2005. My assumption is that everybody's had a chance to read them. I'll entertain any additions, corrections, deletions. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Don Mellon. I don't even see Don Mellon here.
I don't see Don here. If you'd like, I can briefly run through the report that's on page 2-1 of your staff report, if you'd like.
Okay, prior to that, if I could, I'd also like to advise the public that every Zone 3 meeting, we have the General Services Department for the county come and give us a status report of Lake Lopez. We learn about the recreation that's available. We learn about the fish that are biting and not biting. We learn about any vandalism. We learn about all aspects of the recreation out at Lopez Lake, and it's very, very interesting. For those of you that are watching in Pismo Beach, you'll remember that we had a mountain lion that our police department reluctantly had to kill a couple of weeks ago. Because it had a tendency to be a predator. And one of the things that we've talked about here in the past is that there are mountain lion out at Lake Lopez. It's extremely important that you not keep yourself from enjoying that wonderful place, but just be very, very conscious. Don't go walking out into the woods alone.
150 participants attended, and over 400 were at the Sunday awards ceremony and barbecue. As far as projects go, mowing and line trimming has been the focus of maintenance operations. Grading of dirt roads and site approaches continues in preparation for summer. The marina restroom is scheduled for completion by next weekend. That's Memorial Day weekend. And construction has begun on the Mustang water slides, new adventure slide. This attraction should be open by this summer. Special upcoming events, Saturday, May 21st, is a kids' fishing clinic. Sunday, May 22nd, Friends of Lopez Lake meeting and shoreline cleanup day. The following weekend on Saturday, May 28th, campfire program with Smokey the Bear visit. Sunday, May 28th, Calling All Owls night hike. I'll read the lake levels a little bit later. Revenue this April was gross gate was $111,776, and the attendance for December was 25,800, and the report was submitted by Supervising Park Ranger Don Mellon.
Good report. Thank you all. Are there any questions or comments about this report from the members of the board?
Do we know, Dean, is Vista Lago swimmable now, or is it still not being used?
I don't think it's come up much since we talked last. I'm not sure. I don't know. But I believe from what the conversation we had 2 months ago that it requires quite a substantial increase in the water level to have that active.
Okay. All right. And again, for those that are listening live in Grover, day after tomorrow there's going to be a fishing clinic at Lake Lopez, and I'm going to take my little boy out there, and I think it'll be a great time. So please join us. Okay, Mr. Benedix, let's move on to the operations report.
Okay. Again, in your package is the operations statistics for March and April. Just to mention that March is the end of the water year for the Lopez statistics that we keep and maintain. And in your package on page 5-1 through 5-6 are the March and April information. The lake capacity is approximately 74% full right now. The rainfall to date is about 31 inches. The Lopez Water Treatment Plant is producing approximately 3.1 million gallons per day, averaged over March and April. And just a note, on page 5-1 of your report, it indicates that for the total year, the Lopez water deliveries were approximately 86% of the total allocation. And that's the end of my report.
Okay, good. Good. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, let's move along to old business. And first, under old business, is the third quarter budget status. And Straith, is that Zanartu?
Zanartu, yeah. Good evening, Advisory Committee members. For the record, my name is Straith Smith Zanartu, and I am an accountant in the Department of Public Works for the County of San Luis. Tonight, I'm presenting the financial report for Flood Control Zone 3 for the third quarter, and we've had another great quarter. Please refer to page 3-2, entitled The Budget Status Report. It should be on the back page. In the category of capital outlay and reserves, we are under budget by $49,000. It is expected that this category will be fully spent by the end of this fiscal year. If the projects are not complete, the capital projects, that is, if they are not complete by the end of the fiscal year, then the unspent dollars will roll over into next year's budget. In the routine operations and maintenance category, we are under budget in this category as well by $39,000. And in the non-routine operations and maintenance category, we are under budget by $131,000, which, as in prior quarters, is primarily due to the pigging project. The unspent balance of this project's budget at the end of this fiscal year will again roll over into next year's budget. And this concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Yes. Mr. Costello.
Hi.
A quick question for you.
Yes.
I'm looking on page 3-3, Lopez Water Treatment Plant Upgrade Budget Tracking.
Yes.
I'm looking at the column, Original Project Budget Estimate. And we've got county staff time and overhead, professional service contracts. Then we've got the bottom of baseline subtotal, which is $11,367,000. But that's about $9 million, some change over what should be there if you add this up. Is there something missing there?
Same question, Straith.
Yes.
Having to do with the revised project budget estimate, I couldn't get it to add up to the $20 million down at the bottom. And that was one question.
Okay.
And then looking at the RFI, the construction phase services, was that additional cost to the design engineer, or is that the construction management contract that you're speaking of there, the $1.3 million?
It's my understanding that it's the design engineer, but I think I would need to refer back to the project manager on this to make sure.
Yeah, that seems awful large for the design engineer during construction phase.
Okay.
Given that your construction manager is about that same amount of money or a little bit more maybe.
Okay.
John, if I may, that represents the design engineer's submittal review and system integration costs during the process of the contract. We have evaluated that in detail, and I believe that totals about $1.1 million now, with approximately $400,000 of that $1.1 million representing system integration, which is all electronics and electrical work that goes through the system. Black and Veatch will be providing that service to the project. So $1.1 million minus $400,000 is basically $700,000 for their submittal review during the project time. We have confirmed that with a couple of other consultants, including Montgomery Watson, who is going to be doing the construction management of the project.
It seemed relatively large in looking at that compared to the CM cost of services. And I didn't know if the TAC had brought that up at the last TAC meeting or if had looked at that at the last TAC meeting.
I'm not sure whether we discussed it. I think I brought it up and explained that we were reviewing Black & Veatch's original proposal, which was about $1.3 million, and we sort of tore it apart, and we got some detailed evaluations and information on it. And actually, the number that we ended up with, which is about $700,000 for submittals, Montgomery Watson indicated that that was probably going to be a little bit low for the number of submittals and the complexity of the project as they envisioned it.
But maybe I could suggest a couple of things. Number one, maybe we could come back with a maybe a cleaned up budget at the next meeting having to do with some of the additives numbers here. But at the same time, maybe take to the TAC, if we can, Dean, some more explanation of some of the budget figures here.
Okay.
Just so that we can, Jim and myself and others on TAC can get a better handle on it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Straith, maybe these questions that have been asked, if you are going to answer any of them, maybe you
yes.
should do it through Mr. Benedict's, and then, because he has all of our email, rather than responding to one, he can respond to all.
Absolutely. I think you probably all want the answers as well.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank
Good.
You.
Thank you very, very much. One of the other things, too, is we use a lot of acronyms on this board. And Straith had mentioned pigging. And I know I certainly didn't know what that was 6 years ago before I became a member of this board. But what that is where we actually put this device, and they call it a pig, down inside of the pipes. And it actually cleans them out. And that's quite a quite an expense, an unexpected expense, actually. We found and we don't know how or why, but we believe that it's coming through the state water that was actually causing a residue to form within these pipes, and it was not a contaminant, but it was certainly needed to be taken care of when you take a look at capacity issues and those types of things. So we'll try to get away from as many of these acronyms as possible. Okay, now what I'd like to do is we're going to go to the plant upgrade status. And could you give the public an overview of what's going on and then go to your report, please?
Sure. The existing Lopez water treatment plant operates with a media filter system. The plant is, I believe, over 35 years old and is in need of upgrade to assure that we meet the current filtration requirements and the future state regulatory requirements as far as the quality of water goes. And it seems as though every year, every couple of years, new water quality standards come out. They're more detailed, they're more intensive, they're more microscopic and more difficult to meet. And for the past several years, there's been evaluations done, an evaluation of the plant, which indicated that there were some options that we could choose to upgrade that plant capacity or the plant operating conditions. The system upgrade levels would need to be added and what treatment processes would be workable for the full-scale filter system. We finished that pilot plant in April, and toward the end of the pilot plant, we got a lot of successful information that this membrane filtration system was adjustable and was workable for the plant upgrade system. The design has been completed for the upgrade system, and actually it will be presented to the Board of Supervisors of San Luis Obispo County next Tuesday for advertising of the project. Bids are scheduled to be opened on June 30th. We will have a mandatory contractor pre-bid site meeting at the water treatment plant for any contractors who are interested in bidding the project. A couple of items that go along with that. We are processing to the Board of Supervisors, as we discussed just a few minutes ago, a couple of support contracts for the construction phase of this upgrade project. We're going to be taking a contract with Montgomery Watson, who will be the construction manager during the construction phase. We'll be taking that to the board next month, as well as a construction phase support services by the design company, Black & Veatch. To back up a little bit, The manufacturer of the membrane system, the company that piloted, we call it, that prepared and operated the pilot plant, is the Pall Corporation. That's P-A-L-L. And they gave a bid on the project to provide the membrane filtration system and to operate the pilot plant. The bid that they originally gave, well, the bid that they gave us was based on it's called a flux rate, which is the speed of the water that flows through the membrane, of 80 GFD, that's gallons per square foot per day. Through this pilot process, it appeared to us that a flux rate of 55 GFD was supportable and reasonable based on what the district observed during this piloting process. Because of their bid and what we elected to direct them to proceed with a design, there's a difference between the 80 and the 55 GFD. We are attempting to negotiate with them. Our initial response that we have received from them was that they believe that the increase, or I should say, the decrease in the flow rate through the water was going to require them to provide one additional rack or additional group of membranes and additional membrane filters also. And the total that they indicated that if we just asked for a basic to go from a 55 GFD system to from an 80 GFD to a 55 GFD system, that it would cost an additional $385,000. We have asked them to give us a detailed breakdown of that additional cost, and based on the breakdown that they give us, we will commence attempting to try to negotiate something that we feel is reasonable based on the water quality, based on the piloting, and based on their contract requirements. So we're in that process right now. And we hope that to be an amiable negotiation rather than a very protruded and lengthy thing, which would be very difficult on both sides. So that's the end of my planned upgrade status report.
Good. Are there any questions of the board? Joe?
Why did we decide to go from an 80 to a 55?
The 80 GFD flux rate wasn't working. The Pall Corporation spent about 6-7 months trying to make it work at 80. They went down to 70. They then went down to 60. And it did not meet, the operation of the pilot didn't meet the specifications that they had bid on. So the district sort of took back control of their contract and directed them to start at a much lower flux rate so we could prove that this system would work for our water. And we started at 45, we worked our way up to 50, we worked our way up to 55, to 60, and actually 65. And based upon the data that we saw and the recommendations of the experts that we were dealing with, 55 GFD was the number that everybody agreed on as far as a realistic and reasonable flux rate for the system.
Why did we originally pick 80?
We didn't. They bid on 80. It was basically a competitive bid for membrane filtration system suppliers to bid on what they believed they could, their system could handle or use or run at, and their bid, they all basically provided a bid based on that information, and their price was reflective. Yes, they are. In discussing with them, they are amenable to negotiating. So we need a little bit more detail before we can start that process, and that's what we've asked for.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, board members, are there any other discussion? All right, good report, Dean. Thank you. We'll move along to C now, Dean, and that's the Lopez Lake level and rainfall information. Have you given that already, or is this new?
This is new. Okay. This was an item that was brought up last time. You voiced a concern about getting information available to the public and everyone as quickly as possible, and I'm happy to report that we have set up a couple of months ago, about the time that we discussed it, a website, www.slocountywaterdata.com. www.agriculturalmaps.org, which has a very simple link to all the area reservoirs, including Lopez Lake. Yeah. I looked at it this morning, and it was a few days behind, but since there hasn't been any rain, nothing much has changed. But that has a day-by-day total of rainfall and lake levels in it. And I believe in your packet there is an example of that web sheet that I printed for you so you could see that. So that's good. Available now.
Good. Yeah, that's real important to the public. Okay, let's move along now to my favorite subject, which is the HCP review status. And if I could just give a little bit of an overview again for the public. And I'll try not to be biased on this because I have some very definite opinions of my own, but I'll try to just say it as others would like me to say it, I think. Lopez Dam, prior to Lopez Dam being built, there was a stream that came out of the mountains. That stream dried up. 8 months of the year it was dry. We built the dam. Now that we have the dam in place, there are environmental groups out there that want us to now keep that flow of water in that stream that used to dry up all year long. And that's for the benefit of the steelhead trout. It's a benefit for the red-legged frog. Now, no member of this board nor myself wants to see the demise of the steelhead trout, nor the red-legged frog, nor any other species. However, it can cause a tremendous problem for the residents of South County. So what we've done is we have proposed, the county has hired a consultant, and we have proposed what we call an HCP. It's a habitat conservation plan. Now, what's interesting about this plan, I think, is that until this plan is approved, if there is any taking, and I don't know that taking is the right word in this issue, but I think that it is, if there is a steelhead trout that is killed, or if there is a red-legged frog that is killed inadvertently, we are in dire straits as a county. And it's of course a financial situation and they're very, very unforgiving. So what we've done is submitted this HCP, and what we want to have happen is that if you want water in that stream, then we will provide that for you. But what we need to do as part of this plan is if there is an incidental take out of there, we need to be forgiven for, and I believe that's a certain number, and maybe Mr. Ogren can address that when he comes up. But there is a certain number that we can be forgiven for. But also, we all know the rains that we've just had. We have had a lot of rain this year. Do you know that under the current regulations that we have to release out of that dam 2 million gallons a day? Is that the right figure? Four million gallons a day have to be released out of Lake Lopez. And all that the county has to do is that they have to now get together with our consultant to revise the draft to go to them. And the schedule for that to be done is by the end of July 2005. So that's very quickly. That's right around the corner. We have spent $750,000 on this plan, and it's taken us 7 years to get to this point. Now, you talk about bureaucracy. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. So that's why I say, and Pavel Ogren is a wonderful individual, and he knows that I'm not talking about him personally. He's a bureaucrat, though. But anyway, Pavel, why don't you come up here now and give us a status report on
Thank
this
you.
Review.
Chairman Rabinall, members of the Zone 3 Committee, Pavel Ogren with the Public Works Department, San Luis Obispo County. If I might, though, real just quickly backtrack to the budget presentation item. I talked to Straith in the back room for a second there because she wanted to double-check the numbers. There was a question regarding whether the original project budget estimate really added up correctly on page 3.3, and in fact, we double-checked, and it does. On page 1, sometimes these accounting schedules are really kind of tricky because which numbers are we subtotaling? But on page 1, each item, number 1, preliminary design phase subtotal of $433,000, plus item 2, design phase subtotal of $1,860,000. And then on the second page, the item 3 subtotal of $16,092,000, that's the $18.385 million. And I think that kind of what made it look a little bit confusing is the way that the shaded bars were, and it looked like that 430.
Could you repeat that again?
Yeah.
As I flip from front to back, I've got the 462.
Okay, on the front page, which is
433.
Yeah, $433,000 plus the design phase subtotal down there of $1,860,000.
Okay, that's 2.293.
Correct. Plus the construction phase subtotal of $16,092,000.
Okay, where's the construction phase subtotal?
It's just the number right above the very total project, above the total project estimate.
Right, I see that 16.092.
Yeah.
And I see professional services subtotal of 12,788, but where did that 12,788 come from? You got a construction subtotal of 11,367, but there's nothing that adds up to 11,367.
Well, the 1 million. The line item details aren't in there then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the subtotals add up to 18,385, but the baseline subtotal of 11,367 doesn't have the subtotals. What I imagine is there's a hidden column in there for the 11,367.
Yeah.
So we'll unhide that column. Back to the HCP. Well, you know what, Mr. Rabinall? I think you just did an excellent presentation there.
Oh, do you? Thank you.
Yeah, I think it kind of wraps up the presentation.
Well, yeah, but you need to stay up there.
Nice try.
You know, certainly we do also believe that the schedule that Jan had put forward might be possible. The written comments that we've gotten so far include the need to do some revised technical analysis. That certainly is foreseeable before your next meeting in July. Submitting that to the resource agencies is completely within reason. As Doug is going to be presenting some of the details about the meeting that we had with the resource agencies, however, there is a number of verbal comments that they have also provided. And if the written comments encompass the changes that they want to make to the HCP, then I think the schedule that Jan, who is with Fish and Wildlife, is, you know, well, then the ball's in their court. If, however, which sometimes happens on these types of things, we get some written comments early and then we get more written comments down the road and some more demands, then we're going to have to play it a little bit more by ear. In terms of our presentation today, make sure
excuse me just for a second. Would somebody mind just going right over there and flipping down one of those switches? There's an awful glare.
Watch out.
Mobile.
The other one turns off the unit.
Yeah.
Just plan and have been for the duration. So with that, we'll go through and run through quickly a brief chronology. We don't have everything in this, but it's enough to give you and the listening audience an idea of what's been happening with us. In 1990, the State Water Resources Control Board came to us and stated that the permit for operations of Lopez Reservoir does not reflect historic releases, in that it allows for diversion to storage but not direct diversion, which is when you store water for less than 30 days and then send it on through the pipe or release it. Subsequent to that, the district submitted a permit amendment to the State Water Resources Control Board. This is the first step in the process to amend the existing permit. And then in 1994, the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance submitted a complaint to State Water Resources Control Board and California Department of Fish and Game. And their complaint alleged that the historic releases from Lopez Reservoir were detrimental to the steelhead and the steelhead habitat in Rio Grande Creek. And just briefly, the historic releases were that during the summer months, we would release water, but in the winter months, the releases would be discontinued. In addition, the releases were not allowed to flow surface water to the ocean, the concept being that that would have been a waste of a public trust resource. Again, this project was constructed prior to passage of the Endangered Species Act. Steve? We seem to have lost our projector.
Did you hit the wrong button on there?
No, sir.
Okay. That's something I would do. That's the reason I asked the question.
Let's say I don't believe I did.
Do you know where he is?
Okay. All right. Mr. Mayhew should be here in just a moment. If you like, I can either wait another moment or we can continue, but you won't have the benefit of seeing what we're discussing.
Well, I'd like to. Do you tap dance or anything?
No, sir, not here.
Not very good.
Only with my wife, and she's not here tonight.
I see. Well. All right, here comes Steve now. This is the man, he can fix anything.
If I can, I got spare.
Oh, well, you do. Well, there you go, see? Yeah.
While he's working on that, maybe I could just go ahead and illuminate a little bit further. As I stated, in 1994, the CalSPA filed a complaint against the historic releases for the reservoir.
And that's the Sport Fishing Alliance?
Yes, sir.
The viewing public.
Right. Okay, California Sport Fishing Alliance is also known as CalSPA. They filed a complaint with the State Water Resources Control Board and Fish and Game regarding the historic releases. Subsequent to that, we met with staff from the State Water Resources Control Board and other agencies, other resource agencies, state and federal agencies, to discuss the best way to address that complaint. At that time, we were told that in order to address all the issues that may come up in the process that we go through, we would have to conduct a habitat conservation plan, the HCP that we're talking about today, and that the best way to do that, in order to ensure that the needs of the flood control district and your agencies were being met, would be for the district to be the lead agency on the HCP. We'll just go ahead and move on to the next one. Okay, so the first bullet point I've just gone through. The second one, in January of 1998, a representative from Fish and Game found two dead steelhead trout in Rio Grande Creek about a mile below the base of the dam. And within 2 days of that, the district reinstituted releases. as it was indicated that the steelhead were stranded because of the lack of flows in the creek. Then in March, we again met with resource agencies, and at that time we agreed to conduct 5 million gallon a day releases until completion of the habitat conservation plan. This was a critical point and shows the number of Zone 3 and community outreach meetings that county staff has had with you and the public. We've had over 30 presentations to Zone 3. We've had 5 special steering committee and HCP technical advisory committee meetings and a number of miscellaneous town hall and salmon enhancement meetings. Also, you'll notice on the bottom of the screen is a website URL, www.slocounty.info/water/agcreek/, and this is the website for the Habitat Conservation Plan itself. It is in electronic format, and in addition, copies have been provided to some of the libraries here in the county and also to each of your agencies. And we've talked a little bit before about the additional amount of impact on the reservoir because of the environmental releases. On average, historically, downstream releases for agriculture prior to the situation we're in today were about 2,330 acre feet a year. We have proposed in the Habitat Conservation Plan what we call a preferred alternative that includes a new downstream release program that we feel will meet the needs in the environment and still enable Lopez Project to operate as a drinking water supply and to provide water to our agricultural users, but it will reflect a 72% increase over the historical releases, and in that we'll be going from 2,330 average to 4,010 acre feet per year.
Could I just ask a question? Is any of that would any of that be utilized for groundwater rejuvenation?
Yes. Well, any time we put water into the creek system, and we have it's what we would call a conjunctive use. We're putting water in for the agriculture folks. We're putting water in for the fisheries, and at the same time, a lot of that water does go into the groundwater basins, and a number of your agencies have wells that pump from that basin, so that there is that additional benefit. From that, or increased benefit, if you will.
Do you have any numbers on that? What percentage it might be, or some rule of thumb? Percolation values or agricultural use?
Okay. Pablo is going to be covering that a little bit more in detail when we get into the strategy section.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. As I mentioned, we have what we call a preferred alternative that we're proposing to the federal agencies. That includes modification or relocation of the Arroyo Grande Gauge Station and other fish passage improvements. These are seen as barriers to fish passage during certain parts of the year. Development of mitigation accounts, a conservation account, and a mitigation account that would amount to $100,000 a year combined for conducting certain programs. In-stream mitigations and restorations. This would be things such as restoring riparian habitat, putting in spawning gravels and other constructs in the stream to make a better habitat for the fish. Development of best management practices or BMPs for stream maintenance and vegetation control. And a public education awareness program. And some of these things we see that there's good room for a nexus and a cooperative working relationship with other organizations such as the Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. So we see that this might be a dual effort. Okay, and just to review again the resource agencies that are involved, the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is a federal agency, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, of course, is federal. California Department of Fish and Game is state, and State Water Resource Control Board is also state. If we do get to the point where we're actually doing work in the creek, then the Army Corps of Engineers, which is a federal agency, would also become involved, and also maybe the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which is a state agency. So we've got a lot of agencies in the middle of this. Okay. We received certain comments from the resource agencies, and I'm just going to briefly run through these, and then Pavel will get into some of them more as he discusses this in the strategy section of our meeting. They've asked that we include an analysis alternative with higher minimum stream flows, utilizing a different methodology than the one that our consultant used. In addition, they've asked that we consider certain additional species, speckled dace, tidewater goby, and southwestern pond trout, easier to review and to submit comments on and to get through the process in a quicker manner. And last, they've asked that we assure baseline funding versus commitment to specific actions. In other words, they would like us to provide them with assurances that funding is committed for any proposed actions. The significant question that we asked the resource agencies was, can we modify the downstream release program now and implement the preferred alternative? The response from those agencies was, you're not protected. You don't have an incidental take permit. And for those folks who don't know, an incidental take permit is one of the things that we're hoping to get when the HCP is finaled. It is a protection for the district and the agencies in the event that there is an inadvertent loss or take of any of the species included in the habitat conservation plan. And you mentioned earlier, and I'm sorry this isn't any clearer, but this is the proposed schedule. This is actually, as we were informed, this is an example of a schedule that we were given by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for completing the process. And as Pablo indicated earlier, if we can get everything to them by the end of July, and it doesn't seem to be an issue, if everything goes smoothly, we probably will be able to get through this. It's really going to be dependent upon those agencies, but we think we can take care of our end of it. So that concludes my portion of the presentation, and unless you have some questions for me, I'm going to bring Pablo back up.
A couple of questions, Mr. Chairman, please.
Mr. Reynolds.
Doug, when you're talking about expanding the spawning grounds, since we know that we have a very limited amount of gravel left in the area up there by the dam, what do you propose, or what has the proposal been made to expand the spawning grounds?
There's areas in the creek, in particular just downstream of Biddle Park, and I think some upstream of, and that's actually still in the park area, and some above Biddle, a few other areas where if the right gravels were in place, they would be suitable habitat, but because of the relatively low or slower flows through there, except when the reservoir spills, there's siltation that has occurred. So the idea would be, and I suppose expansion is not the best term, but it would be more of an enhancement of what's there and bringing in the gravels that are needed to make it a habitat that they could utilize.
Importing gravel from within the site or off-site or who knows where?
I'm not sure where. We hadn't gotten into it that far, Tom.
Now with the issues that are going on in the lower flood control channel in Zone 1 and 1A, mm-hmm. How I know at one time we studied the habitat plan to go all the way to the ocean, and then when they was thought that the county or the state was going to take over the lower end of the valley on the flood control channel, we backed off from that. How is that going to play if the state goes ahead and takes it over?
I think we're going to have to see how everything comes out with the state. And you're correct. We did have studies conducted all the way from the base of the dam to the ocean. And what we included in the document, the HCP, was a list, a plan to cover all of the activities that the county would have control over, or the district, the flood control district. If the state takes it over, then it was seen that maybe we wouldn't have control of some of the activities. So I think that you know, we're willing to work with the state and see what can be arrived at, and it's really going to depend on a lot on how our negotiations with the federal agencies goes.
And, you know, you referred to the fact that it's been suggested that we expand it and go out into the lagoon, possibly. Who is the owner of that lagoon? I don't think we are we?
No, sir. As you're all aware, I'm sure that, you know, the flood control district owns property up around the dam and maybe 1,000 feet below that. Any work that gets done in this creek below that, other than maybe at Biddle Park, is going to be on private property. We would have to develop conservation easements in order to get in and do that sort of work.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, could I follow up with a question?
Yes, please.
Doug, following up on Tom's question about the lagoon, did I understand the implication there that they want to expand the HCP to cover the lagoon area?
They have asked that we consider expanding not only the lagoon into the lagoon, but also the entire flood control channel.
The problem I see with that is that the lagoon is not part of the watershed into Arroyo Grande Creek, except at the very mouth where it goes to a flap gate. There's no water that comes back up into the...
John, that the your general comments of concern with the lagoon, we also share. In addition, the discussions that occurred at the meeting regarding potential expansion of the HCP to also include the levee system is also a concern of ours. And part of it is that we know that naturally, the under natural conditions, during the dry periods of the year, you know, the creek did not flow in those sections. You know, I think the bottom line is that we have not gotten a request from them to actually expand either the species or the geographical area. That was a topic that was discussed during the meeting, and my subsequent discussions with those who were in attendance, you know, some individuals thought that the resource agencies were leaning to really kind of want us to go there. And others indicated that they're not sure that they thought it was more of a sort of a general discussion about should it be expanded into that area. And that's why in the presentation here we put in the word consider, because it's not clear that they're requesting it, but it was a topic of discussion. In terms of the strategies right now, we know that in writing they have requested us to do some additional technical analysis, which we can get done prior to your next advisory committee meeting, and we can submit it to them, you know, by the end of July as their schedule indicates. And so the very first item here is to proceed with the additional modeling requested by the National Marine Fisheries Services. And that one, we think that Richter, who is the scientist whose name was up on that bullet point when Doug identified this particular item, you know, is a well-recognized individual who knows steelhead. But there are other scientists as well, and so our consultant, Chuck Hansen, in developing the approach to the HCP, which has to be a scientifically based document, used what we believe is a valid scientific approach. The fact that the National Marine Fisheries Services wants to be able to compare that to another expert scientist's approach, you know, in terms of identifying alternatives, we feel like we need to do that analysis. It doesn't mean that we're going to run the analysis and say, okay, we're going to switch our proposal from what we have to, you know, whatever the conclusions of the Richter analysis might lead to. But certainly then we'll get that analysis done. We're going to be back here in July, present that analysis as well as the additional submittals that we plan on providing. Regarding those additional submittals, review, comment, and respond to the resource agencies specifically on the formatting that they've identified, well, that they've alluded to. They're going to provide us some additional formatting requests, the technical analysis, again, the Richter study, and then the other types of actions that they've had. But since the single piece of written correspondence that we've gotten is to do the technical analysis, we do feel that that's a prudent response. We're going to have to play it a little bit by ear. Because if in responding to what we've got right now, they start making additional requests, then we're going to have to evaluate whether or not we think that we're required under the Endangered Species Act to expand the scope of the HCP larger geographically or to include other species. And of course, in doing that additional analysis, if that request is made of the resource agencies, then we'll be back in front of you to talk about our recommendations there. But again, the only written comment we've got is so far is on that modeling request, and it is not clear whether or not they truly are going to sort of make the demand on expanding the scope of the HCP. Okay. You know, the point, though, is that we need to provide a Zone 3 formal response, and that's what is really the next step in that paperwork. One of the challenges that we see, while it is good to have the informal discussions among staff and to talk about issues and what might be relevant and what might not be relevant, the need for a formal response is important so that we can really start pinning down what is going to be, you know, ultimately their demands in this situation. So providing a formal response, continuing the informal discussions with the resource agencies, I think is also important. But thirdly, and if this comes back up, this is the third part of the strategy, is to initiate the dialogue with the legislative representatives. Not coming out of this meeting, but coming out of the July meeting once we formulated our formal response and had the additional technical analysis done. And what we mean by initiating the dialogue with our state and federal legislative representatives is simply that now that in July we will have responded to their written with the legislative representatives after the July meeting and after we've had the opportunity to provide the additional technical analysis and the formal response. Real quick, the other thing we have done is we've researched not the strategies that they're employing yet, but the other HCPs that are being prepared. And certainly the AG Creek HCP is on the front end of the curve. Again, we had the water rights permit back in 1990 that initiated these efforts. But other HCPs are currently prepared. Also, Northern California, in Santa Barbara County, there's four coastal reservoirs, but because those all have federal involvement in them already, they don't have to do the HCP route. Instead, they do a Section 7, and that it's a much less complicated or process, Section 7, as opposed to, I think, HCPs or Section 10, Mark. But again, Lopez is not a federal reservoir. We don't have a federal nexus, and so we have to go the HCP route. Similarly, in Ventura County, there's three coastal reservoirs, and they also all have federal nexus, so they don't have to do HCPs. But Santa Clara County and Santa Cruz County both have a number of HCPs that are going. After our July meeting and after submittal of the technical responses to the resource agencies, we think it's also prudent to get on the phone or go and meet with both Santa Clara Valley and Santa Cruz representatives to understand the approaches that they're taking on their HCPs. And then there was one HCP for steelhead that's been approved in California up in Humboldt Bay. Their physical facilities are not really comparable to what we have here, though, and so that HCP itself isn't going to provide a lot of guidance on how we should proceed on this one. But again, you know, looking in after July, once we've provided our reply to the resource agencies, getting a little bit more background on the other HCPs that are going on in the state. Then there's some other issues that are also interesting that we're already aware of, and we're talking with our environmental legal counsel. State Water Project had some litigation regarding the Endangered Species Act under water supply contracts that fit extremely close to the water supply contracts here for Lopez. And the federal government just paid out a number of agencies over in the valley a settlement. And what happened is that those agencies lost some of their water supply as a result of endangered species requirements. And the courts determined that because those agencies had take-or-pay contracts, that whether they got the water or not, they still had to pay for it, And because the Endangered Species Act was the cause of them not getting their water, the federal government was obligated to pay those agencies for those costs. And that's under a general rule of the Endangered Species Act, that the public at large is supposed to be responsible for protecting the endangered species and not individual owners. Now, on this project, we have, you know, our base contract entitlements to the five cities areas, plus we have about 4,200 acre-feet per year that was historically earmarked for releases downstream, for agricultural, groundwater recharge, and to the extent that the releases still are, don't jeopardize the basic entitlements to all the public agencies, then maybe this litigation isn't going to be relevant. But if the resource agencies are pushing us to release so much water that the entitlements to the municipal supplies are jeopardized, then this litigation may very well be relevant. So, just like understanding the other HCPs that are going on, we've identified known litigation that has concluded and resulted in federal payment to local agencies, and we have to continue to watch the applicability of that litigation to this project as we go down the road. With respect to the question that was asked by Committee Member Versal, I believe, the groundwater recharge. As part of the Santa Maria groundwater litigation, Todd Engineers was asked to do analysis of to what extent is the operations of Lopez recharging the groundwater basin to a greater extent than what would have happened in the natural environment. And that litigation hasn't been concluded, but I'm not giving up any, you know, confidential information because this was all presented during the court hearings and everything. But Todd Engineer's analysis indicated that there is ongoing 300 acre feet per year of additional recharge to the groundwater basin, what they called foreign water, that would not have naturally occurred. The question becomes, if we increase the releases as a result of the Endangered Species Act, then this number will increase as well. Our groundwater recharge number will increase. And is that relevant? If our groundwater recharge number increases, then one response might be relevant items that we need to keep in mind as we're going through this process. So again, the recommended action plan at this time is that we prepare a formal response, we bring it to the Zone 3 committee for the July meeting so that we can submit it to the resource agencies by the end of the July, that we continue with our informal discussions with the agencies, and that we initiate the dialogue with our legislative representatives after the July meeting. That's sort of the sum of where we think we need to go with it right now, and I'll be glad to answer questions. Mark Hutchinson, who's our Environmental Division Manager, is also here in case any questions for him are requested.
Okay, are there any questions, any board members?
I got a couple.
Yes.
Pablo, just a moment ago you touched on the fact that you're going to increase the downstream release to augment the groundwater more than it is now. Well, I'm sure you're aware that in the lower end of the valley, down the lower Sienica part of the valley, this time of year and even later into the fall, the water level is almost on top of the ground, 5 or 6 feet. Now, if we make that any higher, all that water is going to run on into the ocean. Is there any prospects of being able to recapture some of that water through the wells before it gets there to use in the municipalities?
You know, that's the concept that we're talking about. I don't know. Again, we haven't gotten to the point of asking Todd Engineers for an evaluation of how much additional water might we be able to capture and where might the best places be to capture it. But that is something that we have to keep in mind as we go, you know, through this process. If the resource agencies come around and they say, okay, hey, we understand what your plan is, after we provide them additional technical analysis and they live to the schedule that they provided and in fact we get the implementation agreement and the take permit and everything in 2006 and things go well, then at that point in time I think we turn and we say, okay, now what are our options for wells and work with it. If the resource agencies, let's say, made demands for additional water, then maybe those strategies become much, much more important, because the question is, do we have to hold firm, or if we make additional releases, can we easily recapture it again? And, you know, that sort of gets into the issue of how hard do you have to fight for something, and that depends on what kind of alternatives you have. But that's very much, I think, Tom, the lines of thinking that we're keeping in mind.
Fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Larry?
All right, thanks. I'm relatively new to this board, and there's a couple of kind of fundamental things that I'm a little bit confused about, so I'm sure you can help me understand. What are the limits of the HCP as we're discussing it now?
The geographical limit is from the base of the dam to... So Fair Oaks, right?
City limits of Arroyo Grande.
Yeah.
That would be the easterly city limits of?
That would be the southerly city limits, about where the Lost Bears Channel comes across the creek, or across the valley.
Yeah, the ocean side, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think you described earlier that the Zone 3 jurisdiction ends about 1,000 foot below the dam.
Okay. Yeah, but zone 3 boundaries.
I'm looking for the difference in the jurisdictional boundary, the HCP boundary, and then the rest of the Arroyo Grande Creek. That now, and you're actually talking about HCP requests that are down towards the ocean end of it, which would be significantly farther down too.
That's correct. You know, in terms of defining the geographical boundaries of what we should be studying, there is no, you know, standard. That the idea that, you know, are we confined to our Zone 3 boundaries, or are we confined to any specific boundary, this really points to the fact the reason why HCPs are so difficult is because there aren't established standards on them. They're based on science. And so it's not like an engineering standard or a planning standard where we can look and we can see a zoning map, or we can do an engineering analysis that says, hey, you know, the natural flows of the creek during the summer months would have been X, and so that's all we have to release. Those aren't the types of standards. The Endangered Species Act says we have a threatened or an endangered species. What's the science on what we have to do to protect it? Now, recognizing that Zone 3 and the operations of the dam, we're not obligated to do everything in the world to protect that endangered species. You know, and so therein becomes a balancing act of, we know we have an obligation, we certainly have an obligation to understand the science, but we don't have, you know, the 100% ultimate obligation, because there are others who use the water supply. We don't have, the flood control district has no powers to regulate, you know, agricultural pumping. We don't have land use authority. Whereas we are required to do the HCP, we have limited authority over what really happens in, you know, the watershed or on the creek specifically. One of the things that is relatively common for the resource agencies to do is to say, well, we want you, the operators, to take care of any of the negative impacts that others downstream might be causing. And it's not something that they've overtly said on this one. I know that it's been in discussions on other facilities within our county. And the idea is that the resource agencies know that they've got somebody on the hook, and as a matter of negotiating a resolution, then they kind of try to want us to be a little bit of a policeman over others. You know, others that they don't otherwise have an authority over. And that's one of the dynamics that occurs sometimes. We haven't seen it on this one, and if everything goes smooth with the submittal of additional technical information, then that's great. But again, it's the challenge, because there are a number of different stakeholders who are either, you know, using the water or have activities in the creek or maintaining levees, right. And yet we're the ones who are being required to do the HCP.
Yeah, it is. There's something that's kind of fundamentally unfair about it to the people that we represent that are paying the bill for it and are also providing the water to complete that plan. That's an extremely valuable resource, as Mr. Avenel said, and it seems like that there ought to be some way to draw in the other stakeholders and let them share in the in the benefit and the cost.
And as we go down the road, maybe that is something that develops. You know, if resource agencies still have the obligation to understand what we're doing and that we have limitations on our obligations, if a resource agency is not being reasonable in negotiations, and therefore we don't get an implementation agreement, and therefore we don't get a take permit, and let's say that subsequently, you know, there's an impasse in the negotiations, and then an endangered species is found to be dead, it becomes their obligation to show that we did it. And so if we're operating with our four MGD releases, if we've done good faith efforts in preparing the HCP and proposing to meet all of our obligations and the fish dies, then, you know, then at that point in time, we can feel relatively confident that we're in a defendable position in case they try to take enforcement actions against us. So again, you know, the negotiation process is pretty common, whether it's this or some other situation. You kind of try to get the best that you can. And we're relying on the resource agencies to be reasonable in this process and understanding what our obligations are. And, you know, again, if the schedule that Jen had given us is true to form, then maybe we'll have our permits next year. But, you know, again, we're going to have to wait and see whether we get additional written comments from them and additional requests. And if we do, then we'll report back to Zone 3.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions from the board? Pablo, thank you very much for your presentation. On my assumption, it's over. Is it good?
Pardon me?
I'm assuming you're finished.
Yes. Thanks.
All right, moving along.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I actually have a couple questions.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
I asked.
Actually, my question right now is for Mark Hutchinson. And I'm curious, Mark, do you have any reservations regarding your February 18th staff report? Or are you still comfortable with it?
Members of the Commission, I'm Mark Hutchinson, San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department. You would be referring to the concept for an interim release schedule?
Yes.
I'm fairly comfortable with that. We're still looking at all the details that would take to implement it, one of the prime ones being trying to balance the amount of expense versus how much water we could conceivably save by going to that kind of a schedule. That's an important consideration in basically a cost-benefit analysis. How much more water can we keep in the reservoir versus the expense in dollars that we'd have to put out to do the monitoring and the operational changes and short notice to make that happen.
Okay, thank you. Actually, I have some observations, and one of those is that we've had arguably the best environmental minds in the state, perhaps even the solar system, put together this habitat conservation plan. Mm-hmm. And they have recommended a release schedule which enhances endangered species.
And something happens, then we're in trouble. So that's how I understand it. Is that true, Pavo? Or
could be in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Could be in trouble. Yeah. So I agree with you.
Have we got anything in writing from them protecting or indemnifying us now, Pavo?
No. Until we get an incidental take permit, we don't.
We don't have an incidental take permit.
Correct.
So we're operating without one now.
Correct.
But at least
the best scientific and environmental minds, arguably in the solar system, say that we can release at the release rates that Mr. Hutchinson has noted, not that he's proposed, that he's noted from that report, and not damaging endangered species. That sounds like protection to me.
Well, it's certainly not protection against enforcement action. Also, you know, the question becomes, how quickly do we want to push the resource agencies? You know, they've indicated a willingness to negotiate and be reasonable. They've asked for some additional technical analysis. And I think it's prudent at this point in time to respond to them, you know, in that manner. Again, if we find ourselves in a situation where, you know, they can't live by the schedule that they proposed, where they start adding additional requirements, you know, one at a time, then, you know, I do think that we need to reevaluate whether or not we should modify, if we run into an impasse with the resource agencies, you know, should we modify the release schedule to match, you know, the what we are proposing. That's not a consideration that we're ruling out, but we just don't think that it's something that would be prudent to take at this point in time.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Paul, well, I'd take exception to the statement that you said those regulatory people have been reasonable. I've been involved with this for 10 years, and the reasonableness all seems to be on our side. Every time they want to do something, we give, and we've got to draw a line somewhere because, you know, sooner or later we're going to run out of water, and they're going to say, well, we weren't reasonable. Well, I think it's the other way around.
Well, I should clarify my comment. At the meeting, they indicated a willingness to be reasonable. I think that a little bit of time is going to tell whether or not we can draw that conclusion.
But you want to remember, what, 6 or 7 years ago, we had all the regulatory people down here before we started to retrofit. We took and wined them and dined them, and they patted us on the back for what we were going to do, and then they turned around, and we haven't finished yet.
And that's where I think that the strategy right now is to hope for the best, plan for the worst. In educating and initiating our discussion with our legislative representatives at the state and federal level, if we end up running into problems through this process with the resource agencies, I think we want to inform those legislative representatives that we have no choice, but we are going to have to start modifying the release schedule because we can't get anywhere with the resource. But I really don't think it's wise to modify release schedules until we provide responses to the written comments that they've gotten, and until after we started talking with our legislative representatives.
Well, we've talked about this before, and I'm willing to wait till July. Willing to wait much longer.
What year?
This year.
They're talking July 06.
No, 05. Right?
What year are we talking about?
No, we will have at the next meeting for July 05, the responses to the resource agencies. And then after that,
then we'll see how reasonable they are.
So we're going to know that they're not really going to ask for added species, and we're going to know they're not really going to ask that the boundary be expanded in July?
No, we are going to, by July, we're going to provide the responses to what they've asked for, the written comments, plus some of the additional other things, the technical formatting questions. But we're not going to know whether or not they're going to start demanding us to include other species or, you know, demanding an expansion of the boundaries by July.
That's why he's talking about going to see the elected representatives.
We walk out of the July meeting.
Right.
We get approval on the formal correspondence that we're going to play.
Then we start playing hardball.
But it's one step at a time.
Mr. Chair, I think that the things that I see in terms of the recommended action plan are what we should do right now.
I do, too. I as much as I don't like it, I think it is, too.
I agree. And if we find that, and we come back in July, and we find that things are changing and they're not, then we explore what other legal options we have.
Then if they're nickel and diming us and they give us a paper and say, okay, now you got to include these other species, now you got to do this, now you got to do that, and we see this group. I know this group. I know, and like they say, they've been seeing it for 10 years now. I don't think this group right here is going to put up with that, and I know I won't. So thank you.
Does that do own some of that property there? Because that would mean substantial impacts on those other agencies as well, in addition to the county airports.
We certainly are not going to give the resource agencies at a staff level any indication of a willingness to do that, you know, during our informal discussions. We recognize the issue as being as complex and significant. Obviously, you know, our department is in the middle of the 1 and 1A levee system. What we will do if they start pushing on those issues is we'll evaluate, you know, under the Endangered Species Act, what obligations, if any, do we really have there? And we're going to come back and report to Zone 3 on those matters. But we're not going to be agreeing to, you know, anything on that with the resource agencies at a staff level. That's something That is, you know, little things you can agree to at staff level, reformatting of reports, things of that nature. But the significance of the efforts and the time that would be involved, both for the expansion to cover the levee system as well as the lagoon and the addition of other species, I mean, those literally are large, large issues. And that's the type of thing that, you know, we need formal direction on before we would go down that path.
Okay, well, we're getting up to almost quarter after the hour. We need to be moving on. Dennis Delzite is the Public Works Director for the City of Pismo Beach and a member of the Technical Advisory Committee.
Thank you. I was at the April 27th meeting with the state and the federal regulators, and I took notes on the meeting, and since the lagoon question has come up several times, I decided I would provide you with what my notes say. Jen Lechuga brought up the possibility of including other species, and then there was a discussion about tidewater goby, western pond turtle, red-legged frog, three-spined stickleback fish, and so forth. Then there was quite a discussion on that. This was a 2 or 2.5 hour meeting, and at the conclusion of the discussion, it was agreed, my notes say, quote, everyone agreed that what's good for the steelhead will be good for the other species. So I was quite relieved at that point. Felt there was a consensus among the regulators that they had discussed it and agreed among themselves that we don't need to go any further. So again, with the lagoon question or other species, those are what my notes reflect. In a conversation that I had with Pavel Ogren yesterday, possibly today, Pavel mentioned that the people that went to the meeting, he would like to have us get together with him, bring our notes, go over what we got out of the meeting, compare our notes, and before we respond. So it's possible someone got something else different than what I got from the meeting, but that's what I wrote from my notes. Also, something else that's on point that came up is the agencies that are involved in Zone 3, most of them are the same agencies in the gentleman's agreement. And right now, Grover, Pismo, Oceano, and Arroyo Grande are have an RFP out, request for proposal for a to consultants, groundwater consultants, for a safe yield study of the groundwater basin, a groundwater management plan, and a groundwater monitoring program. Now, that touches a little bit with some of the discussion earlier about the recharge benefits of Lake Lopez. How do we make use of that? Touches on Tom Runnels' question, can we capture some of that water just before it gets to the ocean? That would fall under groundwater management. So we're hoping, and we recognize how important it is to make the maximum use out of the water from the whole system. So I thought I would mention that to update you on some things, other things that are going on as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate that very much. Okay, are there any other questions on the HCP view status? Seeing none, we'll move along to new business. Is there any new business from your department?
No, we don't have any, Chairman Ribbono.
Okay. Committee members' comments? Joe? John?
Not this time, thanks.
Tom?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to bring up the the fact that this is Zone 1-1A. Cleaned up down in the lower end of the channel. You know, whether all of us know it or some people do not know it, but actually the problem that has arisen from the sedimentation in the channel doesn't originate down in the lower end of the valley. The sediment comes from all the contributors from Los Barrios and Arroyo Grande Creek and all.
Supervisors is going to get a status update on June 14th. Other than, you know, the fact that, yes, it is, you know, it's a big challenge, but I don't have any other information other than the board's going to have an upcoming hearing on it.
Okay. I think it's worthy of the whole South County discussing it at the political level. Thank you.
Thank you.
I,
I'd just like to let Mr. Reynolds know that the Grover Beach City Council in the last meeting unanimously agreed to send a letter to the Board of Supes requesting them to postpone their plan to turn over to the state for at least a year, and added the language that we think that the county should be looking into implementing some of that remediation for the siltation during that year. Don't wait, just sit on it and wait, but get something going now.
Okay,
so you have our support.
Sure, thank you.
Just so you know, the City of Pismo Beach City Council last night voted unanimously not to send the letter. But what we did do is which we think is more effective, is all five of our council members are going to individually contact each one of the Board of Supervisors and explain it to them, rather than another piece of paper coming on their desk. We think it's important enough that we have a discussion with them.
Sure. Well, and you want to remember, too, that if this thing should happen to go out on the other side, on the north side, it's going to affect the whole sanitation district, and then we're all going to be involved in
sure.
this thing at some point in time.
Sure. Okay, the only comment that I have is I was in Sacramento last week. I had a brief opportunity to meet with the water lobbyist for the League of California Cities, and her and I are going to have a sit-down formal meeting in the very near future, and I'm going to go up and talk with her. One of the issues that came out of some of the discussion up there, and it was really quite controversial, was this Delta smelt issue, where they're saying that now that this thing may be endangered and that Southern California derives its state water from these resources and that our state water is in jeopardy. So, I'll tell you, the public, you need to be outraged at some of the things that are going on. You know, I'm so glad that these meetings are televised so you can actually hear the crap that comes out of Sacramento and legislators that they just don't understand that, we live in the real world. And some of these things that are proposed are absurd. And they just, they make me so mad. But not much I can do about it as an individual, but I tell you what, collectively, we can all do something about it, and that's where we need to head. The next regular scheduled meeting will be July 21st, 2005, at 6:30 p.m. at the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting, City Council Chambers. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you for your attendance. Thank you all.